The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'm very touched. There's so many people here. I had this idea that nobody would come. And then I was happy with that idea. Oh, good. Then I don't have to be nervous. And then it was like, oh, maybe nobody will come. And it's like giving a party, you know, preparing for a party, and then nobody. And then of course, just showing up and seeing, oh, look at all of these people. And I was very touched to, at San Francisco Zen Center, people come into the sitting hall, the meditation hall, the Zendo, in a prescribed form. And there's a loveliness about it that we're all doing the same thing, moving in one body. It's quite lovely. And then I was appreciating, enjoying, and actually quite touched at people coming in, you know, bits at a time and finding their place and sitting down. And I thought, oh, this is, must be what it was like in the Buddha's time, you know. Somebody was showing up to speak. And people came. They came and they sometimes brought something to sit on or sometimes just sat on what was available or on the ground. And that's the way it was for me as I listened to you come in and saw you sitting down. And it's like, oh, we're all gathering here on this gorgeous Sunday morning. And I'm assuming that everybody that's come here has an intention to live an awakened life. I mean, why else would people come inside on such a gorgeous day to sit down and look like they're doing nothing? Right? It's very inspiring to me. So let's sit together for a little while longer and with a guided meditation. Find a place you can in yourself, just starting to notice your breath. Here we are sitting together and breathing, just being aware of being breathed together, breathing in, being aware of the in-breath, and on breathing out, being aware of the out-breath, not having to really do anything, just being aware of body sitting itself upright, however it sits itself upright. Being breathed. All of us together and each of us being breathed. And paying attention to the quality of the breath right now. Is the breath relaxed or kind of jittery or jerky? Is it deep? Is the breath tight? No right or wrong way to breathe. Just simply being aware of the parameters of breath right now. Breath in the body. Breath embodied. And how is it for you right now? Right now, in this moment, how is it for you? How's the body-mind, the breath of the present moment? Welcome to the present moment. Completely here. Welcome to freedom from running from place to place to place. Simply being here. So many of us busy, busy, particularly this time of year. It's a practice of stopping and settling, asking the question, how is it for me right now? How often do we do this in our everyday lives? How is it for me right now? one of the basic practices of meditation can be following the breath. Nothing fancy. Sitting down, stopping, settling, following the breath. Right now we're cultivating mind that's focused or does not have its focus about how breath should be. Comparing, judging, evaluating. Oh, that breath I had a few moments ago is much better than this breath. Or the person sitting next to me is actually breathing in the right way and I should learn to breathe how they do. What's the matter with me? Does anybody notice that I took in a longer breath than I breathed out? What will they think of me and my breathing practice? Just simply being here with the breath. We don't have to accomplish or attain or achieve breath. Breath as it comes and goes simply is. So for this time, taking a vacation, rushing from striving, from urgency, from busy, welcoming the whole body mind just as it is. It's okay to be as you are. No worries about not being good enough. No need to be perfecter. Stopping and settling allows for our hearts to open. Our heart drawing us to be as compassionate as we can be. There's this deep yearning to be compassion, to be being compassion, a yearning that we can touch when we're stopped and settled. There's no need to rush towards nirvana, being enlightened. You are already enlightened. Right here and right now, showing up for this present moment. Being with whatever comes across the experiencing mind-body, you are already enlightened. We're practicing mindfulness, a lifetime practice of being awake. How is it for you? How is the breath, the mind of the present moment? Each of us doing the best that we can. The end of the sound of the second bell will come back together in our usual way. Noticing how you carry the energy of sitting for these few more minutes to the next moment, each moment conditioned by the preceding moment. Let's see, we stop at 10:45, is that right? Yeah. So this past month, I've had one illness after another, a respiratory thingy, then a cold and sore throat, And then this last week, I've had a really hideous kind of flu. You know all those symptoms. I don't have to describe them to you. And so I'm still in this midst of a bit of tiredness and crankiness. And I don't know if you know this feeling. It's when you've been sick and you're not quite well. It's kind of, I feel like I'm walking in this tunnel. Yes, I'm not quite, I'm like here. But there's a part of me that's also in bed. But I feel, oh, it's so much better to be out of bed. It's wonderful to be with all of you. And I noticed kind of my standard favorite habit patterned thoughts of when I'm sick. Poor me is one of the first ones that come. This is my festival month. Some people have a birthday. I have a birth festival month. And that means I can go out to dinner with friends really often or be invited to their house for the whole month. This month I didn't get to do very much of that, and I was feeling really sorry for myself. I missed all kinds of holiday festivities. And then I went to these thoughts of, well, what did I do wrong? What's the matter with me? How come I'm sick? Hi. I'm used to seeing you at San Francisco Zen Center. What did I do wrong? Who can I blame? Who had a cold and came to my house and sneezed all over it? You know those kinds of things, as if there was going to be some explanation for being a human being who, as a human being, is subject to sickness and old age. And, by the way, death is not so far away. So, I know you're not concerned with things like that. This is just my concern. But just in case you do have some thoughts about illness, old age, and death, I thought I'd speak a little bit about how I worked with this last month. I realized at some time that I was actually asking the wrong questions. Right. What was I doing wrong? Who can I blame? How can I get out of this bed right now? Because I've gotta, you know, all those questions. So the body became tighter and tighter and tighter. I got more and more angry. I was feeling really angry, you know, mad. This is simply, it's embarrassing. I mean, I'm old enough to know better. But it's not fair. You know, it's not fair. After I'm a good person, why would this happen to me? Then I felt really fortunate. I felt really fortunate and grateful to this practice that I was exposed to so many years ago, to simply show up to what was actually happening. You know, just simply being with what was happening. Oh, my belly hurts. Whoops, I better get out of bed and do something to take care of myself here. Ah. Oh, this is so hard. This is so hard, Lee. I don't want to be sick, and I am. And I ache, and I'm really hot, and I can't get out of bed to make myself anything to eat, and it's so hard. And it was at that place that compassion just came to me. I didn't have to do anything for compassion. Compassion's there for all of us. The actually showing up to what was actually happening, being with what was actually happening, was the field that allowed compassion to arise and to be there for me, for all of us who are of the nature to be ill and to be old and to eventually dissipate into, I was telling my friend who drove me over here, into this fossilized snail somebody gave me years ago that I have on my fireplace. That I looked and I thought I saw dust next to it, but actually this snail is starting to become dust. Right? And it's like, oh, have I done something wrong? I said to her, oh, I'm going to work that into the talk. Have I done something wrong? This person 25 years ago was in Greece and found this fossilized snail and thought that I would love it and brought it home for me. What have I done wrong? It's becoming dust. It's like, oh, this is the nature of things. This is how it is. Right? For all of us, for everything, it's okay. And actually, being able to be aware of this, aware, how lucky we all are. It's so rare to come across this practice. We are so fortunate that we can be aware. So the heart open to this one. Just simply this one. And this is the Buddha's medicine. It's in the face of difficulty that compassion can arise. The difficulty becomes the medicine. Some of you have heard sickness and medicine arise together. So in the midst of the difficulty, the medicine came. This is what is happening. It isn't anybody's fault. The snail and I, we share this life. So I spend a lot of time sleeping and reading and watching Netflix. I'm in 2003 of The West Wing. That's how often I love that show. So I got to watch a lot of that, and a friend brought me something called The So-Called Life, also a TV series. My attention span for TV stuff is around an hour once a week. But this so-called life, I don't know why it only lasted one season. It's maybe it's so real. I cried in every episode. It's really beautiful. If you ever get a chance to see it, I highly recommend it. So I spent a lot of time reading, and there's books that I have. You probably don't have this, you know, stacks and stacks of books for when you have time. And so I've been saving Bob Dylan's Chronicles, Volume 1. And so I got to start to read it, and I want to read you. Read you something from it. He's writing about the influence in his life and how his music is influenced by so many other musicians that have come before him and that were at the same time of his life. And he refers to Mike Seeger, who is a brother of Pete Seeger, that many of you have heard of, a very musical family. And he talks about Mike Seeger as being the archetypal folk singer. So this is out of the 60s. And as Dylan expresses himself in this book, and probably all of his life, he's a hero of mine, he writes, he writes, what I had to work at, Mike already had in his genes, in his genetic makeup. Before he was even born, this music had to be in his blood. Nobody could just learn this stuff. And it dawned on me that I might have to change my inner thought patterns, that I would have to start believing in possibilities that I wouldn't have allowed before, that had been closing my creativity down to a very narrow, controllable state, that things had become too familiar, and I might have to disorient myself. I knew I was doing things right, was on the right road, was getting all the knowledge immediately and firsthand, memorizing words and melodies and changes. But now I saw that it could take me the rest of my life to make practical use of that knowledge. And Mike didn't have to do that. He was just right there. He was just right there. He was too good, and you can't be too good, not in this world anyway. In order to be as good as that, you'd just about have to be him. And nobody else. The thought occurred to me that maybe I'd have to write my own folk songs, ones that Mike didn't know. That was a startling thought. Up till then, I'd gone some places and thought I knew my way around, and then it struck me that I had never been there before. You open a door to a dark room, and you think you know what's there, where everything is arranged, but you really don't know until you step inside. I can't say I'd seen any performances that were like spiritual experiences until I went to Lomax's loft. I pondered it. I wasn't ready to act on any of it, but knew somehow, though, that if I wanted to stay playing music, that I would have to claim a larger part of myself. I would have to overlook a lot of things that might even need attention, but that was all right. They were things that I probably felt totally powerless over anyway. I had the map, could even draw it freehand if I had to. Now I knew I'd have to throw it away. Not today. Not tonight. Sometime soon, though. I was so touched by this. So touched by this. His recognition of already have the map. I already know what's going to be there. This is what I have to do. Yeah. And this recognition of it's not fully alive. So it appears that Dylan was also uncovering some mind habit patterns. I teach this a lot. I teach a lot about transforming depression and anxiety and our practice, mindfulness practice in relationship to recovery from a variety of addictions. And so I talk a lot about mind habit patterns, mind energies. If Dylan was to fully express himself, claim a larger part of himself, he had to learn how to be music. And he had to give up learning to be music by trying on what others did. His intention, if he wanted to stay playing music, then he had to claim a larger part of himself. He couldn't be Mike Seeger. Because Mike Seeger was already occupying the position of being Mike Seeger in this life. Dylan's position was to more fully occupy Dylan's place. To really occupy, yeah, Dylan's place. It feels so good to talk here. People look at you and stuff. And they smile. and they nod and stuff. When we're at Zen Center, a lot of people, you know, where our practice is to kind of look through the floor. And we're kind of focused inward as we're listening to the speaker. So the way at Zen Center is we don't look so often at the speaker. And so this is, I kind of like this. Don't tell anybody. You know, I'm kind of blended. I'm a blended of a Pashanic and Zennic. Being fully Lee. Yeah. Thank God. Let's see. So Dylan's heart pointed him towards opening that door he hadn't opened before as an expression of his heart. Opening that door that we haven't opened before. Imagining possibilities. Kind of getting out of that box of already having the map, you know? Just opening the door. You know, you hear these about birds and other animals, including ourselves, that we can be, and we are sometimes imprisoned by our ideas about who we are to be and who the world is. Right? And then even when the door is open, we don't step out. Open the door. Step out. Step into something new. I got a little bit on my preacher mode just then. When we open the door to what is actually here, our practice helps us to do that. We stop. We settle. We're mindful with what is actually happening. When we do that, we can step into that place of freedom. We can actually taste freedom from that map that we think we have to follow. We can actually be with what is actually happening. Simply this. Why is it so hard for us to do that? I know. Because of habit patterns, conditioning. Right? When we stop and we settle, we can be face to face with that conditioning and we can find some new pathways. I'm aware of the time. Let's see. What would it be like to relax more fully into our hearts, to our hearts' intentions, to be wholeheartedly, wholeheartedly with what is, with whatever is in front of us, flu, colds, a beautiful morning, good friends, a lovely sangha that we created, leaving other activities and showing up here. Being with whatever is in front of us wholeheartedly. To simply be being who we already are. I want to read you this poem by another friend of mine, Leah Mazzotta. See if I left out anything important that I wrote down. Because I didn't look at it. Okay. So this poem is called A Tree Knows How. I think I am air. I think I am dirt. When I am both, when I am neither, like a tree. Only a tree knows how to be solid trunk and strong, flexible limbs. To silently speak with thousands of tongues that reach for both sunlight and rain. To be fed by roots that thread between rocks and find their place in the earth. To grow in two directions at once. To touch clouds without floating in them. To be grounded, not buried. To never know what a tree is, to simply be one. So for just a few moments, simply coming back to the breath. So here we are sitting together, noticing breath. Breathing in. Being aware of the in-breath. Breathing out, being aware of the out-breath. Some words I borrowed from Ed Brown, particularly at this time as we're facing what we conventionally call the new year. What will you take time for? Will you take time simply to breathe, focusing on the breath, like right now? Will you take some time to make yourself at home, right where you are? Are you willing to settle here, exactly here? This body, this mind, body-mind. Spending time with yourself, making yourself at home. This is meditation. What would be worthy of devotion? So what do I really want? Do I really think it's possible to make everything work out just the way it's supposed to work out? If only I behaved properly, correctly, or perfectly? No? Then what do I really want? This is something to ponder, something that may require some digging, some contemplating. Do I want to control things better? Or realizing that I can't control things, do I want to find composure right on this spot? Do I want to be a slave to every whim that comes along? Or do I want to be free and unmoved by the whim? Do I want to be stone-like and unmoved, removed? Or an intimate contact, touching and touching others? To find out what I want, I have to dig, and I have to sift, to sort through a lot of earth. Hard work, heavy work, a coming down to earth. But how else will I be able to take root, moment after moment, exactly where I am? And so in this beautiful December morning, the sun shining so beautifully, the room filled with love. Buddha fields, we talk about Buddha fields at Zen Center. Buddha fields, as I'm looking at all of you, wishing you to find your place and be your place and express yourself, more fully claim. Jeannie and Len and Kate and Tricia. Each of us. Just be more fully who we are. As Suzuki wrote, she says, you're perfect just the way you are, and we can all stand a little improvement. So I want to thank you for being so attentive. I feel so happy to be here. I hope I'm invited. I've been invited here a few times. I haven't been here for a long time. Happy to be here. I hope I'm invited again. And I think we have 1 minute for questions. But I'll hang out for a while afterwards if you had some questions or comments or you want to give me a hug. So right now I think I would like to bow to you. In Vipassana, we don't bow so much to each other, do we? Do people bow to each other so much? Well, I'm gonna do what I learned from Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, I hold the lotus hold a lotus, and I offer this lotus to you. I bow to you and offer you this lotus. May you be happy. May you be well. Enjoy well-being. May your hearts be open. And you may want to turn to each other and just, may you be free. May you be free. May you be free. And may we all support each other as we express ourselves and our true hearts. Thank you, guys.